Chapter 8. Dark Designs. A roiling grey overcast hung over the towers of Sigma 517, swallowing the rays of the setting sun and plunging much of the processing plant into shadow as Zahariel and his warriors reached the outskirts of the site. They made their approach straight down the plant's primary access road, with a clatter of steel treads and a billowing wake of oily black smoke from the Land Raider's massive petrochem engine. Sitting in the assault tank's troop compartment, Zahariel adjusted the settings of the tactical display on the bulkhead next to his station and switched from light enhancement to thermal view. Instantly, the blocky outlines of the plant's main buildings and its sifting towers were painted in stark silhouettes against a vivid green background, their flanks studded by bright spots of white that marked the locations of hot chem lights. Peering carefully at the display, he could make out a faint white nimbus colouring the air at the centre of the plant. From what he knew of the site's layout, he suspected that was likely the heat rising from the power plants of the Relief Force's 10 Condor transports. According to the blueprints, the site had a large central landing zone for offloading heavy-lift cargo haulers. The reinforcements could touch down there and unload undercover without worrying about fire from rebel forces around the site perimeter. Except that there weren't any rebel troops, as near as Zahariel could reckon. The dark foothills, scoured down to bare rock by Imperial crawlers, were silent and still. Stranger still was the lack of any obvious signs of attack. There were no gaps in the plant's tall perimeter fence, nor thermal scars on the buildings from small arms or light artillery fire. More and more, he was coming to believe that the threat to the plant had been internal rather than external. He'd accessed the site's status reports and work logs on the short flight from Alderaak and discovered that the engineering team working on Sigma 517's thermal plant consisted of 25 Terran engineering specialists and 100 Calibanite labourers. Could the labour pool have been infiltrated by insurgents? Zahariel thought it entirely possible. From there, it would have been easy to smuggle weapons onto the site and hide them in the plant's sublevels until the time was right. Using the advantage of surprise, such a force could then easily overcome the rest of the engineers and the unsuspecting garrison, and then set an effective ambush for Imperial relief forces. Zahariel could understand how such a thing could be done. He just couldn't figure out why. An attack of this kind didn't match the insurgents' tactics to date, and it seemed like a disproportionate investment of time and manpower on a target that was far from any of the planet's major population centres. So far, the rebels were doing a very effective job of crippling the planet's industrial base by fomenting riots in the arcologies and staging hit-and-run raids with small, well-armed guerrilla forces. And this particular plant was sitting idle anyway. Zahariel could think of a dozen targets offhand that would have made better candidates for a takeover. There was a great deal about the situation that didn't add up, and he wasn't heading back to Alderaak until he had some answers in hand. The voice of the Land Raider's driver crackled over Zahariel's voxbead.
"Coming up on the site's main gate now," he said.
"Orders?"
"Increase speed," Zahariel replied. "Advance up the main road towards the central landing zone."
The assault tank's engine roared in reply, and the Astartes in the troop compartment swayed in their seats as the Land Raider surged forward. The vehicle struck the plant's heavy main gate and crumpled it contemptuously. Zahariel heard the faint clang of the impact and the screech of metal as the broken gate was ground beneath the heavy tank's treads, but the barrier scarcely slowed the Land Raider down. As the tank roared along the main road, he switched to the Legion command frequency and reported in to Alderaak.
"Seraphim, this is Angela 6," he called. "We have reached Objective Alpha and are proceeding to secure the area."
The reply came back at once. Zahariel was surprised to hear Luther's voice over the vox instead of the Strategium's duty officer.
"We read you, Angela 6. Any sign of the garrison or the relief force?"
"Negative," Zahariel replied. "No obvious signs of combat either. I expect I learn more once I reach the central landing zone."
"Understood," Luther said. "Broadsword flight is on station and standing by if you require support, Angela 6. Remain in contact at all times."
The librarian twisted a dial on the tactical display and brought up a regional map of the Northwild sector. A green diamond representing the transport craft that had delivered the Land Raider from Alderaak was shown exiting the area to the south.
There was also a small red chevron blinking above the mountains northwest of the site, flying in a circular holding pattern between Sigma 517 and the recently established North Wales Arcology. The alphanumeric code beneath the chevron told him that Broadsword Flight consisted of three Stormbirds, each loaded with a full suite of air-to-ground ordnance. Luther had put enough firepower at his disposal to destroy an entire armoured regiment. Zahariel was more grateful for the obvious sign of Luther's support than the Stormbirds themselves. "Understood, Seraphim," he answered. "We will keep you advised." Zahariel switched the tactical display back to the tank's forward Auspex array, then turned away from the screen and bent in his seat to pick his helmet off the Land Raider's deck. "We're coming up on the edge of the objective area," he said, pitching his voice to carry over the tank's roaring engine. "Prepare to deploy. Brother Attias, take the pintle mount." Silent and purposeful, the veteran squad fitted on their helmets and checked their weapon loads. Across from Zahariel, Chapter Master Astolan readied his bolt pistol and power sword. When the order had come down to assemble a combat patrol to investigate the site, Astolan had been among the first to volunteer. After nearly half a century in garrison, every member of Luther's training cadre was eager for action, and Zahariel was glad to have a warrior of Astolan's ability as part of the squad. At the far end of the troop compartment, Brother Attias rose to his feet and worked his way down the narrow aisle between his squad mates. Attias had been an aspirant of the Order at the same time as Zahariel and Nemiel, and as a youth he'd earned no small amount of grief, thanks to his nervous and overly studious nature. That had changed on Sarosh when an alien monster had melted his helmet with a torrent of caustic slime. Attias had been lucky to survive, but the Legion apothecaries had been powerless to heal the damage wrought by the monster's acid. In the end, they had been forced to strip away most of the flesh and muscle and graft polished steel plates directly to Attias's skull, transforming his face into a gleaming death mask. After more than a year recovering from his wounds, he had joined Astolan's training cadre, where he was roundly feared by the chapter's novices. Zahariel had barely spoken to him in the years since returning to Caliban. Outside of training, Attias rarely spoke to anyone at all. Zahariel watched as Attias stepped past him and took up the remote controls for the Land Raider's pintle-mounted storm bolter. Servo motors whined on the tank's roof as the weapon elevated and began to cover the rooftops of the plant's outer buildings as they made their way deeper into the site. The heavily armored Land Raider was impervious to all but the most powerful anti-tank weapons, but in the confines of the industrial plant, a rebel team with melter bombs, or worse, a melter gun, could be a serious threat. For several minutes, there was nothing to do but wait. Zahariel reached over and unclipped his force staff from where it hung against the tank's armored bulkhead and gripped the cold adamantine haft with both hands. The staff was both a weapon and a focus for the librarian's psychic abilities, and Zahariel took a moment to meditate upon it, as his Raphael had taught him to do. He began with a series of slow, steady breaths, as he interfaced first with a crystalline array of the psychic hood built into his power armor. The array, built into a metal shell that rose from the back of his cuirass and partially enclosed his bare head, served as a crucial buffer that shielded his brain from the terrible energies of the warp. Without it, he risked madness, or worse, every time he unleashed his psychic powers in battle. The interface cables connecting Zahariel to the hood grew warm against the back of his skull as he accessed the array and focused his awareness on the staff. Only then, once he was firmly grounded, did he extend that awareness further and take the measure of the psychic energy surrounding Sigma 517. The shock was like an icy gale against his skin. Zahariel felt his flesh brittle. His muscles tensed, and a hungry, howling wind thundered in his mind. He felt the crystal array behind his head grow hot as the psychic torrent threatened to overwhelm the hood's dampeners. It was like the raging storm he'd experienced at Alderuk, only far stronger and wilder. What was worse, the librarian could feel an otherworldly wrongness about the tempest, a taint that seemed to tug at his very soul. Zahariel recoiled inwardly from the shock of the psychic storm. Screwing his eyes shut, he drew back his awareness as swiftly as he could, but the vileness in the ether plucked at him like grasping tendrils. For a horrifying second, it felt as though there was a sentience behind the psychic force, and he was reminded of the nightmarish spectacle he'd witnessed on Sarosh. After what seemed like an eternity, he managed to pull himself free from the taint. It withdrew and left him shaken to his core. Are you well, brother?
Zaharia looked up and saw Astolan's concerned expression. He nodded, catching his breath.
Of course, he replied. Merely focusing my thoughts.
The chapter master raised a dark eyebrow.
They must be very weighty thoughts. I can see the pulse in your temples from here.
Zahariel wasn't certain how to respond. Did he share what he just experienced? Would it make any difference to Astolan or the rest of the squad? This was a situation he'd never experienced in any training scenario. The matter was taken from his hands, however, when suddenly the driver called out over the intercom,
We've reached the central landing zone. I see 10 Condor aerial transports in tactical landing formation at 150 meters.
The librarian pushed his doubts and questions aside. If there was one thing he was certain of, it was that hesitation in battle was often fatal.
Halt and deploy, he called over the intercom.
Leaping to his feet, he drew his bolt pistol from its holster and addressed his squad.
Tactical pattern Delta, treat all contacts as hostile until otherwise directed.
He raised his staff, noticing for the first time the rime of frost coating the metal shaft.
Loyalty and honor.
The land raider rumbled to a halt, its front assault ramp deploying with a hiss of powerful hydraulics. Astolan stood igniting his power sword's energy field.
For Luther,
he shouted to his men. As one, the Dark Angels answered Astolan's cry. Zahariel had no time to wonder at the chapter master's strange oath. He was already rushing towards the assault ramp, the golden double eagle at the top of his staff held before him like a talisman. The landing field was a dark grey plain of permacrete some 500 metres square, bounded on three sides by huge multi-storey mineral refinery and storage plants. Cylindrical sifting towers loomed over the idle refineries, ringed every 10 metres by blinking red hazard lights. They cast long shadows across the field, bisecting the orderly rows of Condor transports crouching silently on their squat landing struts. Zahariel swept the field with his bolt pistol, searching for targets as the squad spread out around him. The transport's assault ramps were down, and all of the craft he could see had one or more of their maintenance hatches open, but there were no signs of activity. The librarian felt his scalp prickle as he grew aware of the deathly stillness that hung over the plant. He glanced at one of the warriors in his squad who was busy sweeping the field with a portable Auspex unit.
"Any readings?" he asked. "No movement, no life signs," the Astartes answered. "Trace heat on the engines of the transports, but that's all."
Zahariel's eyes narrowed warily. That wasn't quite all. He could sense the tension in the warrior's voice. There was something else, something invisible that didn't register on any of their equipment. He'd felt it once before, many, many years past, when he travelled deep into the forest in search of the last Calibanite lion. This was an evil place, Zahariel knew. The air was heavy with a sense of malice and slow, hateful corruption, and it knew he was there. A dreadful sense of déjà vu swept over him. Zahariel raised his head and looked past the hulking buildings and silent towers, searching the horizon for clues. He studied the broken line of mountains that comprised the nearby North Wilds and realized that he was very close to that same spot where he'd fought the lion decades ago. The terrible twisted trees were gone and the echoing hollows had been scraped bare, but the aura of the place somehow remained.
Not far from here,
a hollow voice spoke in Zahariel's ear. With a start, he turned to see Atias staring at him just a couple of meters away. The lenses of Atias' augmetic eyes were flat and depthless in his polished, skull-like face.
What is that, brother? Zahariel replied.
The castle,
Atias replied. The words were flat and emotionless, resonating from the small silver vox grill embedded in his throat. He raised his chainsword and pointed off to the northeast.
The fortress of the Knights of Lupus was just a few score kilometers off that way. You remember?
Zahariel followed the whirring tip of the sword and stared off into the gathering darkness. Sure enough, he could just make out the distant flank of Wolf's Head Mountain, the old peak from which the disgraced knights had taken their name. They had been the last of the knightly orders to defy Johnson's plan of unification against the great beasts that terrorized Caliban's people, and their intransigence had ultimately led to open conflict. He remembered the horrific onslaught on the fortress as clearly as if it had been yesterday. That had been his first real taste of the brutality of war. The worst shock, though, had been once the knights of the order had breached the outer walls and fought their way into the castle proper. The outer courtyard of the fortress had been full of enclosures, most of them filled with twisted monstrosities. Zahariel and his brethren had been horrified to learn that the Knights of Lupus had been collecting as many of the great beasts as they could and preserving them from the wrath of Johnson's forces. Johnson had been so furious he'd ordered the fortress to be completely destroyed. Not one stone had been left atop another, and every trace of the Knights of Lupus had been wiped away. Except for their library, Zahariel realized. The library of the renegade knights had been vast, larger even than the one at Alderuk, and filled with a huge assortment of ancient and esoteric tomes. To everyone's surprise, Johnson had ordered the library to be catalogued and transported back to the Rock. No one knew why, and Zahariel never learned what happened to the books after that. The North Wilds had always been the oldest, wildest, and most dangerous wilderness region on Caliban. Now, nearly all of the forest was gone. But had something ancient and inimical somehow remained? Astolan's voice shook Zahariel from his reverie.
"Is your Vox unit working, brother?" he said.
He nodded his head back at the idling land raider.
"I've tried to check with the crew, but no one is responding."
Zahariel turned and stared worriedly at the massive vehicle. He keyed his Vox unit.
"Raider 2-1, respond."
Nothing. No interference. No static. Just dead air. The librarian took a step towards the assault tank just as the driver's hatch rose on hydraulic hinges and the warrior's helmeted head appeared.
"We've been trying to call you for a full minute," the driver said over the rumbling engines. "Our Vox unit's not working properly."
Frowning inside his helmet, Zahariel tried to contact Luther. The orbital communications array and the Rock's far more powerful Vox unit should have easily picked up the signal, but once again, all he heard was dead air. The unit was working fine, he knew, and there were no signs of jamming. It was as though their Vox signals were simply being swallowed, though he couldn't imagine how such a thing was possible.
"The Vox was working fine at the plant's perimeter," Astolan said, clearly thinking along the same lines. "We could send the land raider back to maintain contact with Alderuk while we secure the site."
Zahariel shook his head. The whole point of bringing the land raider in the first place was to provide a base of heavy firepower for the squad and to serve as a mobile strong point that the Astartes could fall back to in the event of an emergency. Until he knew more, he wanted the tank close by.
"Button up and keep a close eye on the Auspex arrays," he ordered the driver, "and secure the assault ramp until we signal."
The driver acknowledged with a curt nod and dropped back inside the tank. Within seconds, the circular hatch and the heavy ramp clanked shut, sealing the vehicle tight. Zahariel then turned to Astolan.
"Take two brothers and see what you can find at the plant's control room," he said. "There ought to be a log of Vox transmissions at the very least."
He indicated the landing field with a sweep of his staff. "We'll inspect the transports and try to find out what happened to the relief force."
Astolan acknowledged the order with a nod. "Jonas and Gideon, you're with me," he said,
and headed off across the landing field at a ground-eating jog with two of the squad's warriors close behind him. Zahariel waved the rest of the squad forward.
"Spread out," he ordered, "but remain in visual contact at all times. If you see anything strange, inform me at once."
Weapons ready, the Dark Angels advanced across the landing field towards the closest of the condors. Permacrete crunched underfoot. Zahariel glanced down and saw deep cracks running through the landing field's pavement. Here and there, he saw the tops of slick brown and black roots pushing their way up through the cracks. Caliban's forests were not surrendering meekly to the Imperium's ground-clearing machines. His home planet was a death world, Zahariel had come to learn, and such places were nearly impossible to tame. Still, it surprised him to see so much damage to a site that couldn't be more than 8 months old. Reinforced permacrete was built to resist the elements for centuries. They came upon the first transport in line, approaching it from the port side. Zahariel saw at once that the Condor's cockpit, set between the craft's building air intakes, was empty. The librarian circled around aft as the squad surrounded the transport. Bolt pistol ready, he peered up the open assault ramp into the red-lit troop compartment. It was empty, save for an open toolbox sitting in the center of the bay.
"Access panels are open, starboard side," Atias said, peering up at the ship's fuselage.
Zahariel walked around the transport and studied the open hatches.
"All specs and Vox arrays," he said thoughtfully.
"I suspect the crews were running tests on their systems and trying to determine why their Vox units weren't working."
"And then?"
Atias said in his sepulchral voice. Zahariel shrugged.
"I don't know. There's no sign of a struggle, no weapons damage to the transport. It looks like the crew just walked away."
Like Sarosh?
Attias declared. No, not like Sarosh, Zahariel shot back. The people of Sarosh went insane. This has to be something different. Attias said nothing, his augmetic eyes lifeless and unreadable in a cold steel mask. The sound of running feet resounded across the Permacrete plain. Zahariel turned to see Brother Gabriel approaching at a dead run. Astolan says to come at once, Gabriel called out. We've found something.